welcome back to another week of La Bonne Heure with Valley here on CITR 101.9 FM. A lot in store for you today, but before we start, I would like to acknowledge the fact that I am currently located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people, and would also like to acknowledge the land upon which you are currently tuning in for as well. Later on in the hour, I will be talking to Adrian Underhill about his music and creative process. But before we get to that, I will be talking to Cobra Man about their new single, Heatwave. Here it is. Heatwave, which you will hear a little bit more about very shortly, but before we get to that, here is my personal favorite Cobra Man song, Everybody Party Tonight.
Oh,
here with Cobra Man today. It's nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in for an interview.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Before we start more of the music and band side of the interview, I was wondering if we could start off with a couple fun questions. So the first one is, if you could see any film again for the first time, which one would it be?
I have two. Weird Al's movie, UHF, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Those are very influential movies on my childhood. I remember having a very intense feeling of curiosity stumbling across those movies that like really stuck with me. Yeah, I really love those movies. Even though it's kind of corny and childish, like I'll always love those movies.
I would say the first thing that came to mind was Terrence Malick's movie Days of Heaven, because I do watch that movie like once a year, I think. But I don't know. It's always interesting to me. Also E.T., I feel like that would be one that would like blow me away.
If you had to choose a favorite dessert, what would you choose?
I mean, I like ice cream. I think I eat ice cream every night. So that's mine.
I support that.
I really like fruit tarts.
Any specific fruit?
You know, like the kinds of tarts, it's like pie crust with like custard and kiwi and strawberries and like blueberries and, you know, whatever else.
And then the last question is, if you suddenly gained access to a time machine, would you rather go back in time or go to the future?
I'd go back in time.
Where would you go? When would you go?
I think I'd go way, way back to like hang with some dinosaurs.
Yeah, I would either go back to like the Renaissance, or I would go like 1,000 years in the future.
So moving a little bit more into the history of the band and to yourselves as musicians as well, I was wondering how both of you started getting into music and how you both individually started that musical career as well.
My parents were ballet dancers, so my brothers and I were always in voice lessons and piano lessons and dancing and acting. So we were kind of doing all of that. I was lucky to have like that world, you know, available to me. So I've always done things in the arts, but then I think when I was like in high school, I started really getting into music and was like, I think this is something that I would like to do forever.
And let's see, my parents forced me to take piano when I was a kid, and I loved it, but I hated being told what to play. Like the teachers would never teach me the songs I wanted to learn. But you know, eventually, you know, I probably took piano lessons for like 10 years. And I remember for my 12th birthday, I got a bunch of money saved up to buy a PlayStation 2. And my dad was driving me to go buy it. And on the way, we passed a music store. This is in Kentucky. And for some reason, I was like, oh, let's go check out the music store first. And we walked in, and there was just like a like Fender Squire like package for the same exact price as the PS2. And I just decided to buy that instead of the PS2. And that kind of changed the course of my life, because I don't play video games. And I really became intensely curious about music after that. And pretty much every year I started picking up a new instrument.
If you could go back, would you make the same purchase, or would you go after the PS2?
Yeah, no, 100%. I would stick with the guitar. Like I said, I didn't even like video games then. I don't even know why I wanted that. I think just like everyone around me liked them. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll get that. But I don't know. I was never into video games. I always thought it was boring. So glad I made that purchase. Good investment.
I was wondering where the name Cobra Man came from, how you came up with that.
Well, it's just another name for the devil. You know, he came in the form of a snake. We were throwing around some other ideas, and that's the one that stuck.
How did you decide to start making music together? Because I know that you were originally kind of working in different areas. And then how did you form the band?
kind of started with making music for the Warble, for Tom specifically. He was editing some skate like lookbook videos and they needed music. So I started making some stuff for them, and then I made a disco track, and I needed someone to sing over it. So I hit up Sarah. She came and sang on it, and it was like a fun day. And it was like a dream of mine since I was a kid to have like a big disco band, like very theatrical and stuff. And I think somebody we were with suggested that we start a disco band. And so the rest is sort of history from there. We just started writing things. And next thing we knew, Tom and the dudes needed more music for their videos to be posted on Thrasher. And so we just started making stuff for them.
I had a question a little bit more about that relationship with Warble that came in from a listener, actually. The listener, Raul, is wondering, saying that they're genuinely curious about whether you make the music specifically for the things that Warble is going to put out and release, or do you already have the music made and then choose what to put in the videos after they're filmed?
I mean, the last two videos that we did with them that had a lot of music, it's like we were finishing the video and the music like the night before we put them out. So it definitely goes very hand in hand. We work closely with Tom when we're doing that, those soundtracks. And yeah, I mean, it really, Tom is very good about giving guidelines for what he's looking for as a reflection of somebody's style or like what he's thinking with the narrative. So he gives us some ideas and we sort of start writing with that and then come back to him with something, and we go back and forth until we land on something that we all like.
We've written some separately from that too, like Heat Wave, we wrote that on our own, and you know, that kind of worked with something else that they were doing. So
yeah,
we've done both, but it started off, you know, with Tom's guidance and references and everything.
Right, that's a good point. It's like, that's how the first two were done, but moving forward, we've been working on our own album to the point where like, we don't have a lot of extra time to like write a whole separate soundtrack. So at this point, we're spending more time on our music. So Light Me Up and Heat Wave and some of the other ones, those are ones that we have done for our own thing and the Warble is using for their videos.
I do want to get back to Heatwave in a little bit, but I was wondering before that, you've mentioned that Cobra Man kind of made its own genre of music and you called it Los Angeles Power Disco. Could you tell me a little bit more about the elements of that genre and how you came up with that?
Sarah and I have a lot of similar influences, obviously a lot of music from different time periods. And one of those that we really connected with is like old rock and old kind of like left field disco. And just historically, because of what was going on during those time periods, it never really had like a strong crossover. Like those two spheres existed separately. And there was like a couple bands that did some stuff that was close. Like Kiss did an album of like disco rock and like kind of like more like ZZ Top aesthetics, where it's like electronic rock. And then most recently, like you have bands like Justice, and there's like not too many other ones. And so that is sort of what set us off in the direction of like what we call power disco. And essentially it's just a mixture of a bunch of different anthemic genres. And we think of it as like, also our style is, we set out to be like an empowering, inspiring band with like a lot of high energy. And so we just felt that that was a good label to call that.
Looking a little bit into Heatwave, which you came out with quite recently, it is quite accurate to what's happening at the moment around the world. So I was wondering whether you wrote that, you know, during this quarantine process, or if you wrote it before and somehow predicted the future.
We did write it before, which was weird. And we've had a few like that have been, you know, sort of what's the
like prophetic, like
yeah.
Prophecies.
Yeah, we're not, we didn't try to do that. It just kind of happened, which is interesting. But, yeah.
Yeah, we wrote that song like a year and a half ago, I think. And you know, global warming and talk about climate change has been a thing for a while now. So can't take credit for predicting too much. We all kind of knew it was going to happen, but the timing of the release was very interesting because when we released it, it was the hottest week on record in Los Angeles. And we had a music video made about that. And I don't know. Yeah, some of our songs, we had one that we wrote at the end of last year called Lockdown in Los Angeles. And then next thing we knew, like the quarantine happened, and that was like a little creepier for us. And we decided to change the title because I think that we can make it a little bit more relevant. We didn't want to like release a quarantine song like after the fact or something. I don't know. It's just like we don't really want to sing about the quarantine. That's a little too on the nose, even though Heat Wave like dipped into that a little bit. But yeah, it is a bit weird when that happens, and it's happened with a couple songs that we have that are unreleased as well. So that's sort of starting to be the theme of this next album, the sort of like an apocalyptic prophecy party time bar brawl vibe.
I'm looking forward to that. If I'm not mistaken, you actually directed the video with a lot of really amazing scenes and imagery as well. I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit more about what the filming process looked like and what setting that up and the directing process as well.
For sure, yeah. Oh, well, Sarah and I wrote that video like while we were writing the song like over a year ago. And you know, we've been around for about 3 years now and we didn't have any music videos. And part of that is due to the fact that we're both involved in film and we didn't want to do anything like too low budget. Like I work as a director, and so I really wanted to be able to lean into that as much as possible, not be too limited for what we were going to do, especially given like the type of music we write. I didn't want to make something that was visual that would take away from anything. So we got the money together. We pulled like every favor that we had with all of our film friends, and you know, we locked down a really sick location. It was the kind of thing where we hit up a small group of people to help us film this thing, and we were kind of planning a smaller video. And next thing we knew, like they were talking to people who we didn't know were fans of ours that worked in the industry. And so we had all these, we ended up with like a huge crew of people who were just down, and we had no idea that we could do that. And so that really was the reason we could make it happen. And obviously we had to dance around all the COVID restrictions, like getting everyone tested, having a medic on set, like all of that. And it was, there was definitely a lot of hoops that we had to jump through for it. But as far as directing, I mean, we planned everything out before we shot it. Like every shot, we went and made a mock-up of the whole video. Our production designer, Frankie, was great at like giving us sketches of what all the setups were going to look like. Our DP Ben was really helpful in planning out the lighting looks and all that. So we kind of had a really strong idea of what we were doing before we went in, and it was just a matter of getting everything done in time. The weirdest part was like I've never directed myself on camera, so there was a lot of times where like I just relied on Sarah and my girlfriend Bonnie to like tell me if we got a shot, and then we just had to move on. Like I wouldn't even watch what we did. But yeah, it turned out great. Everyone's really stoked on it, and seems that the more people that find out about it are stoked on it too. So we're really happy that we made it.
It's a beautiful video, I have to say.
Oh, thank you.
So you touched a little bit on your creative process with the previous songs that you had made in more of a collaboration with the Warble videos. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your creative writing process for Heatwave.
Yeah, sure. That one came pretty easy. We were working with Isom Ennis on that, and Andrew just had this riff on the piano, and then like from there it all just came. And you know, he had this idea about being stuck in a heat wave and looking through like Tinder, trying to find someone to go to their apartment to cool down because his air conditioning broke. But yeah, it all like happened very fast in one day. I think we wrote the whole song, and then yeah, that was a very quick one.
Yeah, I think that one in particular was a good example of not getting in our own way when writing. It we were struggling with another song, because I mean, every artist hits like roadblocks with their stuff, or you get stuck or whatever, and you start overthinking, and then like sort of the magic is gone at that point, and you need to take a step back, at least for us, or for me rather. But for that song, we were working on something else. Isom went outside to like take a phone call, and I remember that I started trying to figure out that Wu-Tang Clan song, like Cream, like so I started playing that, and then I just started like riffing, and pretty much right away we had the Heatwave riff, and Sarah was like, oh, that's sick, even though it's nothing like that Wu-Tang Clan song. And then Isom came in, I was like, what if we work on this? And he was like, okay. And then it was just layer by layer, we weren't really thinking about it, we didn't have a thought and about where we wanted it to go or what we wanted it to be. We just kind of let it happen, and layer by layer, it didn't take a lot of tries to just lay everything down, and before we knew it, we had the song in like maybe 3 hours. And then from there we tinkered a lot, but I remember like even the next day we came in and we had all the lyrics and melodies written. It just flowed out very easily, and like being in like, not to be cliche, but like a flow state like that is really when the best music for us is written. And it's difficult because it's really easy to get in our heads about like, you know, what is this going to be? Because like we put out music with a lot of high energy, or like it's got to like kind of be like this timeless thing, or it's got to be heavy or whatever. But that was just one that we let happen, and we ended up being really stoked on it.
Your shows are also renowned as being, you know, very high energy, as you mentioned, very fun, and very energetic. Do you have a favorite show memory?
The last one was great at the Bootleg. There was like a line around the block. That was pretty amazing. And we were in the backstage, which was downstairs, and we could see the ceilings like bending. And that was super fun. It was just packed. And yeah, all of our shows, we just have such a good time. And I think that's part of our thing with the music and the shows, is like we're our best when we're having fun and like in the moment. And I think that's what people respond to.
Yeah, I think for me, definitely that show. It was our first show with the live band. That was a massive process to get together because we hadn't been in that kind of a workflow. So there was a lot of gear we needed to get. There was like a lot of technical stuff with like MIDI and controllers and backup rigs. And like, you know, cause like our songs are all so different from each other that it's hard to just have like one guitar and like one set of pedals to do everything. So it was like a really long process and lots of like late nights trying to figure that out and lots of trial and error. And we probably spent like 6 months to a year getting it together. And it was just a lot of buildup leading up to that show, and like everything went perfectly, and it was just a crazy sense of relief, and it seemed like everyone had a really good time. So that last one was definitely special.
Post-pandemic, if you could play a show at any venue in any country, anywhere around the world.
Acropolis?
Yeah. Yeah, the Acropolis.
So I know that, you know, often a question that gets asked is, what's your favorite song that you've created? I was wondering if you had a favorite lyric.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Let me think.
I'm looking at the new ones, but I don't know. We want to give any away.
I think probably one from Heatwave. I don't know why. This is like the most weird. This is an example of just like the way that my brain works. But when we were writing Heatwave, I don't know why, but I just kept picturing Shrek. And the first line of the second verse is like, back in the swamp, just me and the dogs. And I was like, I don't know why. It's not cool. It's not like funny or anything, but I just kept picturing like a glimpse of like some Shrek-like character just like singing about how he's hanging out in a swamp with a dog, but meaning like a donkey. And I don't know, I just like the way it sounded. I like the imagery of it, so we kept it. But I don't know, that's like my favorite one, I think. Back in the swamp, just me and the dogs. And that's like a horrible story, but that's true.
I like Living in Hell. I love the lyrics to that song. I think that's up there for me.
You should redo the video of Shrek.
We talked about it. I mean, I know that's very trendy to talk about Shrek, and I was not dipping into that at all. I was just like, man, maybe this should be a video about Shrek. I don't know.
So you have mentioned working on an album. Do you have any ideas of release dates or anything that, you know, fans can look forward to in the coming month?
I think that we're going to release another single before the end of the year. And yeah, it's hard to say. We're definitely going to keep releasing singles. I think that that's the plan right now. I can't say when like the album will come out, but at this point we're just talking about releasing everything on it as singles, because why not? You know, nobody's telling us we can't. And the game has changed a bit, I think, and we're thinking about adapting to it a bit more. We're self-releasing right now, and I think that we'll probably keep doing that. And so we're trying to figure out like our own lane. And so they can look forward to new music, but I don't know when the album's going to come out. Sometime next year.
We were just working on one today, so we're doing it. It'll come soon.
All right, that's it for the interview. Thank you so much for the chat with me.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Living in Hell by Cobra Man. Such a pleasure being able to talk to them, and make sure to check out their new single, Heatwave, and the video, of course, too. Up next, we have Cruel by Adrian Underhill.
Thank you.
thank you very much for coming in to chat with me today.
For sure.
I thought we could start with some fun questions. If you could tell me your favorite music genre and maybe your least favorite music genre.
I don't know. I feel like I'm trying to dig into more like 80s and 90s kind of like piano ballady music that's like on the verge of like being like too cheesy. But there's also like the more that you lean into it, there's like, I feel there's like a lot there and a lot that like that relates to my music and that, yeah, good emotions, good deep emotions that I've been thinking a little bit about, like, what has the ballad become? Because I feel like there was like a long era in like the probably 60s, 70s, 80s, and a little bit of the 90s where like every full length album would have just like a super slow ballad on it just to kind of fill that space. And that we still have slow songs, but we don't have like the ballad. Mm-hmm. And that's something that has been intriguing me lately. Least favorite music genre? I don't know.
Maybe something that you don't listen to as much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, EDM?
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, I really hesitate to like, to speak, try to speak to some type of music that I don't like, because I feel like, because I'm not drawn to it, I don't understand it. And therefore, like there's types of music that over time I've grown to like that I didn't like initially. And it's like, you have to invest some of your own energy to kind of like go a little deeper. And it's like, so it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you know what I mean. Like if you're not interested in something, you're not going to hear what's cool about it. And it's like, you could make an argument that there's something interesting to hear in every type of music, and you have to invest your own interest as a listener to find out what that is. That being said, I have loved like some of the recent like Calvin Harris projects. Mm-hmm. Like the like funk wave thing project that he put out like a couple years ago with like guests on every track. Mm-hmm. Was amazing. So
that's true.
I don't know, not really EDM, but he's definitely one of those people you think of probably.
Mm-hmm. Would you rather breathe underwater or be able to fly?
Flying. Yeah, flying sounds great. I feel like I dream of flying every once in a while, and I probably dream of it because I'd like to do it.
And if you could have any animal as a pet, what would it be?
I'll say a cat.
So diving a little bit into the music side of things, when did you realize that you had an interest and a passion for music and that's what you wanted to pursue?
I'm still discovering that. It's still an ongoing, yeah, journey of like, how do I want music to be in my life? And, you know, that reveals itself in layers as you go through this journey. But I don't know, I grew up playing music. My parents are both musicians. So I've always kind of been around music. I was playing cello for a long time and kind of like in the classical music world as a kid. And then as a teenager, kind of switched to playing more guitar. And yeah, I became really interested in pop music. And like at probably 12 and 13, I started listening to Z95.3. I'm from Vancouver, so I can give a little Vancouver shout out. And yeah, played in bands in high school and then I went to film school and I thought maybe this is where my artistic energy is going to go. And then kind of as soon as I finished school, that energy went back to music, and that has been my main like creative pursuit for the past 10 years or so.
Who would you say are your musical influences?
Musical influences. I grew up as like a Beatles head, and like that's how I learned a lot of music, was just by learning Beatles songs and like, oh, they put this chord in here, oh, they did this cool thing. That was a big part of my like pop music education. And then as I said, also like loving catchy like pop music of that era. Like the first CD that I bought was Savage Garden. I don't know if you know Savage Garden. their sort of soft pop band of the 90s. And I'm gonna have you Googling Savage Garden. It's pretty, just gonna funny. And so like things like that that I was like sort of ashamed of then for a while as I got more into rock music and indie music, and then kind of weirder, you know, guitar music. I became a huge like Deerhoof fan. All of us, I think it's become more accepted in the past 5-10 years that we can listen to things from a lot of different genres and bring that into our work. And it's not a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that my music also has like a certain connection to like that sort of like 70s, 80s piano based songwriting, like a Carole King or like Todd Rundgren or things like that, that I've also tried to find the through line and how that music like comes into the 2020 and filters through more modern production, and like, you know, not trying to be a throwback or anything, but finding inspiration that in that type of music for sure.
If you could make a song with any of those artists that you've mentioned, dead or alive, who would you choose?
I mean, I think I just gotta say Prince. I mean, that would just be amazing. Obviously Prince he's an enigma. He's somebody whose music I have dove into more in the past 5 years that it took some investment of my own time to really like find some of the things that were incredibly special about his music that I didn't see at first. And I mean, come on, it's Prince. It would be amazing to make music with him.
What's your creative process like when you're writing and making a song? What comes first in terms of lyrics, melody, beat, different things like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I usually start by just like playing around on the piano, finding some chord changes that sound pretty to me or sound interesting. And I do a lot of recording through that process. So I might like create like a little loop, or I might rough out, you know, a few different sections of a song before there's even a melody. And then I might spend some time improvising different melodies. And then often there won't be lyrics for a while, so there'll be kind of a melody with gibberish lyrics. And then over time, I might kind of figure out what lyrics seem to fit, or I might already have an idea of different like vowel sounds that I want in like different places and try and find the words that fit those vowels or consonants or different kind of like syllabic emphases. So yeah, it's kind of a slow process. I'm a slow writer, and I do a lot of recording and leaving things, coming back to it months later, being like, oh, here's something cool, let me add on to this. And then it sits for a little while, and then I add on to it. So that's kind of been my process for the last while.
So if you could perform at any venue, I'm going to say Vancouver, especially since you did give a little shout out. But if you could perform at any venue in Vancouver, which would you choose?
Amazing. It would be cool to play at the Orpheum again. I grew up singing in choirs that performed at the Orpheum. And it would be cool to carry that through line into the present and perform my own music there someday. Nostalgic venue for me.
Thinking about your last album, which was, you know, See You Again, I was wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about where the inspiration for that album came from and what messages you wanted to kind of put in your lyrics and give to the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was really kind of partially getting tripped out by the idea of a first album and just this like question of not only what do I want to say, but what are people going to hear and how can I connect with people and find some kind of deep common ground between what's going on in my own life and what I see happening, you know, with friends and what's happening in the world. And Like, how can I find a way to connect these things? So I feel like that those questions kind of just took their own path and were answered in a number of the songs. And yeah, just trying to find commonality with people. And that was kind of, those were some of the things I was trying to focus on.
And in your song, Not Good Enough, it is quite a, like a vulnerable track.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you wrote thinking about personal experience, or was that something that you wanted to write for more of a wider audience and to get people to be able to relate to it?
I think it's both. That's exactly it. It's like, it's, where's the intersection between personal experience and something that has to be real for me in order to write it, and something that you just feel is in the air, and there's, you know, there's something about those things that I'm expressing that are universal and also like really seem to speak to the era that we're in. Yeah, so I think it's the meeting of those two points.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite lyric that you've written?
Probably not. It's hard. I feel I'm very like hard on myself, and I also, I feel like I write lyrics kind of intuitively without really knowing what I'm doing. Whereas like on the musical side of things, I feel, I don't know, just more at home, and like it's easier to identify the things that I'm kind of building on or improving on, the skills I'm trying to add, or, you know, new things I'm trying in each song. Like, I feel like lyrically, I just kind of, I've gone through processes in the past where I'm like, let me try to be like this, like lyrical storyteller person. I love like, you know, this person's work. Let me try and write like this kind of song. And it's never really, I haven't really ever found a way to do it. The types of songs that have always felt like they're in my own voice just follow intuition. They're usually simple. They're usually emotive and just very like not hard to understand. It's very straightforward. And that's, there's lots of other types of songwriting I admire, but that's what's always kind of felt like my own voice and what comes most naturally to me.
Would you say that, you know, now we're in this kind of quarantine period where a lot of people are having a lot more time to just kind of be by themselves and practice their hobbies a bit more, but also, you know, their passions and things like that. Would you say that quarantine has given you an opportunity to work on new music, or kind of given you that time to maybe develop new sounds, anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I've definitely been spending a good chunk of the past 6-7 months working on music, however long this has been now that we're in November. Yeah, I'm getting to the point where like I need to involve more people, more musicians, and you know, start planning some of the things that will take an album to completion. But it's hard because those things aren't happening in full force. So what I have been doing is like, yeah, a lot of like working in my home studio, working with a friend over FaceTime and sending files back and forth. And that, I think, breeds a certain type of music. And it's a piece of what I want to do, but it's also like there's a limitation there, which can be good and can be interesting. And but yeah, definitely been spending a lot of this time trying to craft a next release.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the music that you're currently working on, would you say that your sound has changed, or would you say that it follows a similar theme and sound to the last album?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities. I've tried to, a large part of like the beginning of the writing phase that became my debut album was writing on piano for the first time and trying to figure that out. And so that has like remained at the core of this. and continues into this next album. And at the same time, there was a lot about that first album that was like contributions from people who were collaborators, that that was like a unique thing that we created together. I went down to LA and recorded for 3 days with some amazing musicians there. So a lot of that's not going to be repeatable. So, you know, it's going to be different, but at its core, it's, you know, like keyboard music, and you know, follows my the same voice, the same intuition about what chords to put together, what melodies, what ideas to communicate.
And do you have any potential, you know, times that people can look forward to new music, or is it still kind of in the works and in progress?
It's still pretty much in progress, but next year for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice talking to you.
For sure, you too.
And I'm very excited to hear some of your new music in the coming year.
Yeah, amazing.
We're separate people, we have different minds. Two different hearts, but they are both aligned. Whether or not we are in the same place, I close my eyes and I can see your face, giving me strength when I'm falling apart. And I want you to think of a friend or lover when you hear these words. Can't wait to see you.
A beautiful song to wrap up today's show. That was the acoustic version of Adrian Underhill's See You Again. I was so happy talking to him about his music, and I'm so excited to hear what he comes out with in the future. Et avec ça, je vous souhaite une bonne reste de semaine et à la semaine prochaine pour de nouveaux entrevues et aussi de la nouvelle musique. Avec moi, Vali. Vous écoutez La Bonne Heure et j'espère que vous passez une très bonne journée. Au revoir.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory.